Okay, so today I want to talk a little bit about some economics, and mostly I want to talk about some Keynesian economics. Now, I'm not a big Keynesian myself, but I think that, you know, all sides of the arguments have some really good points. And, you know, I think Keynes has some good points as well. And I think the best part that the best part of Keynesian economics is the fact that Keynes understood that demand drives supply. Demand leads to supply. Now, let me explain what that means. So when I say demand leads to supply, you know, what I'm talking about is demand creates, I would say, the awareness to produce supply. Right, so if you had no demands for anything at all, if you had no needs for anything, if you had no wants for anything, then you would not produce anything. So let's say you take a caveman, for example, and you throw him in the forest, and he was never hungry, he was never thirsty, he was, you know, he never wanted anything. Well, then he wouldn't produce anything. He wouldn't go hunting, he wouldn't farm, he wouldn't, you know, go around looking for water or for berries. He wouldn't do that, right? Because if you don't want anything, if you have zero demand, well, then you're not going to have the urge or the awareness to go and create any supply. So I think that Keynes took a very, like, bottom up, I don't know if that makes sense, but he took a very fundamental approach to looking at what creates supply. And so, yes, so demand creates the awareness to create supply. So he got that part right. And something else that he got right is that demand for whatever also creates the awareness to make investments, because making investments is essentially trying to increase supply. Because, you know, if you make investments, then you're either creating goods or services, trying to make them better, trying to make more of them, trying to make them more efficient, whatever, right? And so you're going to be earning more money through your investments because you're creating more supply or better supply. And when I say supply, I mean the supply of goods and services. So I think in that case, Keynes got the whole demand supply thing correct. Now, I think the problem with the whole Keynesian solution to that is, you know, with the whole interest rates and the whole fiscal stimulus injections. Now, right now, we're supposedly functioning under a Keynesian system where you're supposed to raise fiscal stimulus, monetary stimulus during bad times, and you know, so you run, you go low interest rates, QE, whatever. And during good time, and also during bad times, you have, you know, you run these big fiscal deficits. Right now, during good times, we're also running these big fiscal deficits. So we're not really doing Keynesian economics. We're taking it to a whole new level where we're running fiscal deficits all the time, where we're keeping interest rates low all the time. And so the more you do it, the more you have to take it to a more extreme level than you were before, because you can't keep on doing the same thing. And it's kind of like a drug addict who's addicted to drugs. I mean, you can't lessen the dose. You can't withdraw that easily. And the problem with keeping interest rates low during, you know, bad times is the only reason why it would boost the economy, at least in the short run, is because, you know, supposedly you're supposed to let consumers borrow more, and so then they can spend more and more earnings for businesses. And so then you get, you know, inflation counteracting deflation, and you get higher earnings and higher debt. So that would kind of counter the negative effects of a recession or whatever. Now that's what's supposed to happen, but the problem is, you know, consumers can take on some debt for a bit, and interest rates can stay low for a bit. But then, you know, once the consumers take on too much debt, that debt becomes hard to pay back. And so you got to keep interest rates lower than they were before during normal levels. And so when you keep interest rates lower during normal levels, even if you keep them lower, there's a certain point where, okay, consumers have borrowed too much and now they have to pay it back. And now their interest becomes a big burden because they have a lot more debt than they had before. And a lot of the debt they took out was not to invest, was not to produce, but it was to spend on normal goods and services. And then you run into a problem where you have to go back into a recession because people can't spend, business earnings begin to fall again. And so now you got to lower interest rates, but you got to make them lower than they were before. And every time recession hits, interest rates, the normal level and the recession level interest rates go lower and lower every time. And, you know, you saw that in 2008. After 2008, interest rates remained low for a very, very long time. And when they tried to raise them in around 2016, they barely went anywhere. They went slightly above 2%, you know, the Fed funds rate, but that's incredibly low, historically speaking, anyways. And, you know, in 2019, they had to lower them again. And 2020, they went to zero again. And so, I mean, you got to go lower and lower every time, but there's a certain threshold to where interest rates cannot go any lower, right? Once you get negative, okay, well, Fed funds could be negative if it's even legal. If it goes negative, but then you have to look at where consumers are getting their money and businesses are getting their money. You know, the businesses and consumers aren't getting their money from the Fed funds rate. These guys are getting their money from bank loans. And look, you could make Fed funds rate negative, but you can't make bank loans negative because no banks are going to lend at a negative rate. You can't make them zero because, you know, banks aren't going to take on a risk, a return-free risk. You know, that's pointless for banks. And there's a certain level above zero that banks aren't going to accept. You know, it has to be above zero, but above a certain level above zero, if that makes any sense. So that at least the bank's risk is not so high that they would not make any money giving out loans. So the bank loan rate has to be above zero, and it has to be a bit above, slightly above zero, if that makes any sense. But so the point is, for banks to loan out money, there's only a certain level that you're able to go for loans. You can't basically make banks loan at rates that are too low. And, you know, you could lower interest rates all the time, but once you get too close to zero for bank lending rates, you can't go any lower. And there's a certain point where consumers can't afford to take on any loans if the bank loans aren't close to zero or at zero. And when that's the case, well, then you have a really big problem because the debt keeps on getting bigger, and to keep on going through more and more and more and more debt to keep, you know, the economy from just collapsing, you need more debt. And when you can't afford to go negative interest rates on bank loans, well, then consumers aren't going to get any more money than they already got. And then these guys are going to have to pay back their loans. They're going to have to pay back all their debt, and corporate earnings are going to fall. But the problem is you can't save the economy again with lower interest rates because you can't go any lower. I mean, you could make Fed funds lower, but you still can't make banks loan money at a negative rate. It's just impossible because, I mean, banks aren't going to do it. No one would loan other people money and pay them to do so, right? I mean, you could just keep cash if you want essentially a credit risk-free type of asset, and cash doesn't yield negative. That's why you can't get a negative nominal yielding treasury. You could get a negative real yielding treasury, so an inflation adjusted treasury, and that's because although you still might be getting negative interest rates on your treasury, real interest rates, it's still the nominal, or at least the real interest rates on the treasuries is still higher than cash. And cash is like the, you know, the standard for what people can hold. And so if it's better than cash, then all right. But if you're going to give a treasury at a nominal interest rate or a real interest rate that's worse than cash, no one's going to take it. Right? No one's going to take a treasury that you have to pay someone to own, because, you know, cash is more liquid than treasuries. Cash is safer than treasuries, not by too much, but it's safer. A big reason why it's safer is because of how liquid it is. And so you can't get a bank to loan at a negative interest rate either. And once you hit a certain threshold, you know, the lever for trying to pump up the economy again with low interest rates, you know, it ends, because you can't go any lower. You can't make banks lend too close to or under 0%. And when consumers get too much debt, you know, these guys can't take on any more debt, unless if the interest rates on bank loans goes very, very close or under zero, close to. How do I keep on saying close? And so that's the problem with all of this monetary policies. You get bigger booms and you get bigger busts. Now, what we're getting here is you have these very, very long upward trending cycles, and you have some recessions that are just saved by debt super, super quickly. But the problem is eventually when everything has to be paid back, because a lot of that money is spent on, you know, consumption. When you issue all these low interest rates to, you know, everybody, a lot of that money is spent on consumption, more than it otherwise would be. And so when you have that, then what you end up having is all of this debt that becomes very, very hard to pay back. You know, it's like so now you need lower interest rates every single time, and you need a normal interest rate, normal level, that is lower every time that you place in these monetary stimuluses. And so, and all of this is really supposedly to boost demand. And, you know, the interesting thing with demand is that demand tells you what the people with money wants to be produced, which allows people who produce things and who are investing to know what they should produce or invest, which is, you know, good. But sometimes what they want is to produce or invest in the future. And you don't exactly know what they want, but you know that they probably want to consume something in the future. And so you save that investment for the future, which, you know, could be a good or a bad thing, but, you know, resources are scarce. So it could be a good thing that you want to produce or invest in the future. Now, when you just drop interest rates so low and all of this, you know, you prevent that from happening, and all of your savings are depleted and all of this debt is taken on, which again leads to longer and bigger boom and bust cycles, which could be good or it could be bad, but usually it ends up in a pretty bad way, especially when you have fiscal spending. That really distorts what people demand, because you have natural free market demand through, you know, even if you artificially lower interest rates and artificially increase debt, and I'm talking about public debt, personal debt, whatever, every type of debt, including government debt, although that's not really what I mean by free market demand, but you increase a lot of free market demand. And so with all this free market demand, at least people are getting what they want. But when you have all these big fiscal stimuluses, fiscal spending, you don't really target where people want to spend their money. And so you misallocate a lot of capital through investments. You misallocate a lot of capital through inflation, because you're basically, you know, monetizing your debt or printing money to spend for the government. And so your fiscal stimuluses, I think, misallocate a lot more resources than monetary stimulus does. But there's at a certain point where your monetary stimulus no longer works. And so I think that, you know, if the government, you know, if the government completely just was like, okay, I'm not going to do anything else, and you know, the Federal Reserve is gone, the Treasury Department is shut down, nobody's going to spend any more money anymore. Let's say Ron Paul became the next president. Now, I think we go through a lot of deflation, and I'm talking about asset price deflation, maybe or maybe not CPI deflation. That's a little bit harder to say, but definitely asset price deflation. I'd say that we definitely get that. Maybe it'd be quick. It could be quick, or it could go on for a long time. But I think we're going to get some really, really bad asset price deflation if the government just decided to do nothing about, and well, do nothing about assets and asset prices. Now, the Fed, I think there's a certain point where the Fed can no longer do anything. And that's the problem with relying on the Fed too much, is on the Fed alone too much to save asset prices, is because, again, you could lower interest rates, but once banks are starting to have to lend at zero, or, you know, too little above zero, well, then banks just stop lending. And then, you know, consumers, companies, whatever, no longer have access to increased debt. And then your debt, you know, buildup starts to fall. And then asset prices start to fall as well. And so the only way out of that is through fiscal stimulus. That's, at least that's the only obvious way out of that, unless if the Federal Reserve Act is changed, which would mean a different thing. But I think if you're betting on inflation, you would have to be a lot more speculative than if you're betting on deflation. But I think speculative in a reasonable way. And that's because, you know, throughout history, when governments had to try to save their asset prices, the asset prices of their countries, when the government debts are so high that it's almost impossible to pay them back, a lot of the times the governments just decide to, you know, do whatever is needed, change up their laws, and spend a ton of money that's monetized by their central banks. You get a lot of inflation. If, you know, throughout history, that's happened many, many times, and even in the modern day. Now, maybe the U.S. is different. I don't know. But it's kind of, you have to speculate if you believe inflation's coming. Now, I think stagflation is more likely, and I think stagflation is probably one of the best risk to reward bets. But, you know, they're all speculative to some. I think any type of bet, any type of investment is speculation. But just with different levels of risk, there's different levels of information accessible to you. you know, different levels of reward and all of this. But I think that if you have to bet on inflation or stagflation, you have to bet that the government is going to do something, you know, or spend money. Fiscal deficits are the most obvious things that the government will do, or just change up the Federal Reserve Act. But I think they're reasonable speculations. But you know, if they don't do anything for some reason, which would be possible, not very politically expedient, not commonly seen throughout history. But if they don't do anything, then I think you could expect some deflation, because people are no longer able to borrow any more money. And the system, the credit system, basically just collapses.